What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I'm senior editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm reviews editor Sherlyn Lowe.
And joining us today is Nick Summers from the UK.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
And producer Ben Elman here to chime in a little bit about electronic music and listener mailbag at the end.
And that sound you hear is Charlie XCX's theme song for Nintendo World, which is where we want to go right after CES. It's wild. We've got a grab bag of news today and a chill news chat, I'd say, because I'm tired of planning things and I'm tired of overthinking things for the show that will not be named.
The plague.
The plague.
Okay. I'm still jet lagged, but I'm already having to plan for my next few trips. So thank you very much, Devendra.
As always, if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcaster of choice. Drop us an email at podcastinggadget.com and please leave us a review on iTunes. All reviews help people find the show. So let's head back to Super Nintendo World. Nick, what the heck is this?
So we've known about this for a while. Nintendo is teaming up with Universal Studios to work on a theme park inside a theme park. So Super Nintendo World is going to be part of Universal Studios Japan, which is inside the city of Osaka. But we didn't really know what that park was going to look like. You know, we've seen a couple of incognito, like, overhead shots, you know, from people who have been trying to take sneaky peeks. But we didn't know what the attractions were going to be like and really how it would all work. So, this week, kind of out of nowhere, Nintendo dropped a music video to tease it. And that's the single, at least behind it, is called We Are Born to Play, which I believe was done, by Galantis. And it's featuring Charlie XCX, which is pretty crazy.
That's pretty cool. Well, I would say we still don't know what the park looks like. This whole trailer, it's a great CG fest. It is a trailer for a movie, but with no actual footage from the movie. It's a very strange thing, right?
Are there any characters in this trailer that I don't know?
Yeah, I mean, there's Mario. There's, like, you know, you get to see the Mushroom Kingdom, which I actually think the footage you see, especially at the end when they're, you know, you see Mario kind of running on top of some blocks, for instance. I think that the sort of the hills you see around him is actually what the park is going to look like. Like the photos we've seen of Super Nintendo World, that is how they're modeling it. There's quite a lot of sort of verticality to it almost. I don't think you'll be able to physically climb up there, but that is the sort of general aesthetic that they're going for.
I want to punch some blocks. I want to throw some fireballs. There was a scene in the trailer of just like a ton of people throwing fireballs at enemies. And I'm like, is this Battle Royale? Is this just Mayhem Mario style and everyone is murdering people with fireballs? I don't know.
Nick, would you cosplay as Mario and go? Because I really want to see that.
Oh, I mean, of course. I mean, they're aiming to open this park in the summer. It should be just before the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. So who knows? Maybe if we're planning some tech coverage around the Olympics, we can swing by and see this place too.
How will this work, by the way? Like, I think we know there will be wristbands. There will be like some things to kind of like keep your interactivity in check in the park. And that's something Disney has done before. Do we have any sense of like new things Nintendo is doing?
Yeah, so there was a media event as well, which they did for local press. And there was a few details that came out of that. So there are these, the wristbands that you see in that trailer, they're called power-up bands. And they're going to sync with a smartphone app that somehow kind of tracks your activity inside the park. Apparently you can sort of collect coins as you go around and you'll be competing with other visitors in order to accumulate them. It's not really obvious how you collect them and sort of how you're rewarded with them, but that's the kind of general idea. And the app's going to, you know, of course, have the map of the park and show you the different attractions and the things you can do. But that sort of in-game system isn't super clear right now.
Gotcha. At the very least, it looks fun. Like there's a clip of a guy riding a Yoshi, and I want that to happen somehow. I don't know what it's going to be. Is it going to be like a Segway in Yoshi, like covered in Yoshi suit or something? I want to ride a Yoshi.
Yeah, I think they have confirmed that there's going to be some kind of Mario Kart there. I think that is
of course.
Set.
That's like the easiest thing to do, right? Yeah.
But I'll be interested to see what else they put into it. It reminds me of, do you remember the packing game for the Wii U that was literally called Nintendo Land?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm thinking maybe it's going to be like that, right? Where every sort of attraction is based loosely on one
recreating of the packing game that nobody bought from a system that completely failed. Yes. Yes. I like the way you think, Nick.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be a little better than that.
I hope Charlie XCX has a residency there. That'll be amazing. I'd just go for that. And also, as a brand new Switch owner, hey, I am now excited for all things Nintendo.
That's good.
Except for I don't like Mario, so.
I do have one thing to say about the Charlie XCX theme song. Like, it's fine. It's good. I think that she was a very good choice for it. But I think the real heads know that Porter Robinson would have been the right weeb for the job to do this. He would have been a good secondary choice.
I just want to say that this is the entire reason Ben is on the show this week, just to talk about
yes.
this, literally.
To talk about Porter Robinson and how much of a delightful weeaboo he is.
And this is when I say, who is Porter Robinson?
Oh my god, thank you.
I don't know.
I did not dare to ask.
Also in gaming news this week, Sony announced that they are not attending E3 for the second year in a row, which is kind of surprising when they have a pretty big product launch coming at the end of the year. Nick, what is up with that?
Yeah, I think in years gone by, especially last year, it made a lot more sense just because we're coming to the end of the console life cycle and we kind of knew what PS4 exclusives were left. You know, we knew they were working on Last of Us Part 2, Death Stranding, for instance, just come out, Days Gone, all of this sort of thing. There's Ghost of Tsushima that's left. And they kind of showed them a couple of times. And the impression that we got from them was, okay, you've seen these. We don't want to just keep coming back and keep showing you the same stuff, right? So taking off last year made a bunch of sense. But as you implied, like this year, they've got a console to launch, which is kind of crazy. You know, Microsoft is going to be there clearly in a really big way.
So now Microsoft is going to own the show, basically, because they have the Xbox Series X, which is, their big PC-like console coming. They're basically going to own the show. It's kind of, crazy.
I mean, of course, Nintendo will be there too. And who knows, you might finally see this, you know, heavily rumored Switch Pro that keeps getting talked about. But
they don't need it. I love this console war, by the way, because Nintendo doesn't need to do anything. They just need to sit back and just count their, like, ever-growing bank account as, like, they pump out cheaper Switches. It's great. It's great for Nintendo. Let the big boys, you know, have their battle and destroy themselves, basically.
Yeah, and I think this is an extension of really what we've seen with so many other tech shows, too, like CES and like MWC. A lot of companies are realizing that if they're on top, they have the power to set up their own events outside of the show, and they can draw people to that specifically, right? Whereas for a show like E3, a lot of the smaller publishers, maybe you wouldn't tune in just for them, or maybe you wouldn't go to a convention just for them. But Sony, they don't like have to be there. They don't need that broader presence in order to grab eyeballs. They can have their own dedicated PS5 launch event sometime in the year, and everyone is going to tune in, like, guaranteed.
Yeah, they'll own that news for however long. If they were smart, they'd do, like, a PlayStation week of just, like, here's some initial news. Like, every day we'll drop some game news or something. Just, like, own that cycle.
Yeah.
Makes a lot more sense than, like, trying to fight for attention at E3.
Yeah, and as you mentioned earlier, I think for Microsoft it makes perfect sense too, right? They want more of the sort of week of E3 to kind of have their moment in the spotlight, right? To have that.
They're a bit of the underdogs in the console world, right? Because, like, they are coming from the Xbox One initially was not a great launch. It was kind of a muddle thing. And then Sony owned the, like, hardcore gamer sect for a while. So, yeah, it's funny how the tables keep turning for both of them. Speaking of Microsoft, by the way, there was also that story about the Xbox executive who said they're not going to have any exclusive games for the first year, which is also, I think, like, you're looking at all these pieces in play, right? Like, I'm sure Sony has already said that they're going to have PlayStation 5 exclusives. And basically, it seems like Microsoft is building this ecosystem of, like, the games coming will be on the new console, will also be on the old console, but they want to keep this cross-platform parity alive. It's going to be an interesting console generation.
Yeah, at least cross-gen is what they're saying, right? Like, there might be something that's exclusive to the Xbox family, but the idea is that, at least at the beginning, if you've already invested in a One X, you don't need to have the Series X straight away, because some of those games which come out at launch are still going to be playable on your system. So,
even though those are the owners who would want to buy a Series X right away, so this is getting confusing.
It is. Yeah. The way they're going to have to try and pitch it, it will be, I'm interested to see how they do it, like what their marketing materials are like and how they try to avoid confusion between One X and One Series X in store. That just seems like a disaster waiting to happen. But I guess I'm cautiously optimistic for now.
Cool. One thing I want to drop here is it seems like Microsoft is taking the PC approach wherein you don't throw out your video card after, 4 or 5 years. Like, you could still play a new game, maybe at a lower resolution and much lower quality, but you could still play it. And it seems like that's what's happening with the Xbox line and also gaming on Windows. So if Microsoft goes that route and Sony just goes, like, well, we're taking the traditional console route, like, There's an interesting separation there in terms of gaming philosophy.
Yeah, my only sort of footnote to all this is, it's a bit of a shame that E3 is losing such a heavy hitter. You know, for many people such as myself who love games, this is the kind of magical time of the year. Everyone who loves games wishes they could attend E3. And so to have such a huge tentpole platform holder not be there, it's going to hurt a little bit. You know, of course, we will still get that announcement at a different time of the year, but it's going to suck not seeing them there.
Yeah. You do also attend Gamescom, Nick, which is actually a bigger show than E3 and a more international show. So I feel like we're also seeing the war between E3 and Gamescom happening. Gamescom is in, what, Cologne, right?
Yeah.
In Germany. And so much of Sony's groups, so much of Sony's upper executives now are based in Europe. So there's a weird corporate strategy thing going on here. We'll keep an eye on that. We're hearing there's going to be more news about PlayStation 5 soon. I'm looking forward to maybe an Xbox event around GDC. Like, there's a lot of stuff rumbling, so stay tuned to Engadget for all of that.
I love to be a wet blanket, so I'm going to take y'all from being super hype about your games conventions and take you back to the world of sexy web browsers. Microsoft had some news this week.
We take some hard tangents here.
We do.
It is fun.
We love turning left, right, and 180 degrees. But yeah, so Microsoft has some news this week. Devendra, you profiled or you covered the new Chromium Edge?
I've been, covering this for quite a bit, which is a kind of a wild thing. About almost 2 years ago, they announced that they're going to be giving up on the Edge HTML engine for their Edge browser, which was the thing they started when Windows 10 launched, and they're going to be moving over to Chromium. So essentially, they're making the core of Google Chrome, you know, the basic core of Edge. And that is, it's just kind of wild. It's felt like Microsoft giving up a little on the whole thing of building a browser. In my conversations with them, it seems more like, well, if we have a good core that we don't have to like worry about fighting with Google so much, they can build in other features. So what's happening this week is that the new Chromium version of Edge is officially out. You could download it, install it for Windows 7 and 8 and 10 and also macOS. So this is a brand new Microsoft browser that's actually not terrible. It's fast. It's secure. There are going to be some new features I really like. There's one called Collections where you could just like grab a bunch of websites, put them in like a drawer and just share that list with people. So if you're like house shopping or apartment hunting, you can take that list and turn it into a Word document. You could turn it into an Excel spreadsheet. Like, it is very much like a Microsoft nerdy productivity thing. But I find it really useful for collaborating for things like vacation. So it's a better browser. That's all it is. It's finally a good version of Edge that I can just tell people, just use that. You don't need to go and get Chrome or Firefox immediately. Any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I have so many thoughts on this because I gave up on Internet Explorer ages ago, like, I don't know, in 2000.
I hope.
And I guess you have to convince me more because now you're telling me this one other feature they've got over Chrome is Collections, which sounds like
they have a bunch of other features, and I think much more usable privacy settings. Like, there are a lot of people who don't trust Google in terms of what Google is doing with their data. Yeah, so this is not an alternative.
It's so basically the hook here is that Microsoft's new Edge browser is going to be a bit more private for you than Chrome is. It's still not going to stop me from installing Chrome the first thing I do when I get a PC. Also, Internet Explorer still exists?
Internet Explorer does not exist. There is now a Internet Explorer mode within the new Edge, so you can launch a special tab that's like isolated. Because, Sherlyn, people, first of all, companies suck and they have old web apps that only run in like Internet Explorer. So I used to support this crap. So, yeah, that's why these things still exist. You can run like this isolated browser to run an old web app or something, which is great for IT people and like corporate users who just need old intranet stuff. So that's great. The actual Internet Explorer app is not going to get uninstalled from PCs. But new computers will not ship with any of Internet Explorer. So, yeah, this is a good thing, I think, for computing as a whole. It's a great, fast new browser that's safe. It's going to be the default in Windows. It's the thing most people are going to end up using. So it's a good thing.
I don't know. We'll see. Nick, what browser do you use?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on Chrome, but I've certainly experimented with other Chromium-based browsers. You know, there's Brave, there's Vivaldi, there's Opera. It feels like there's a ton of choice, but when you really boil it down, almost all of them, bar Safari and Firefox, are based on Chromium these days. So whilst there is competition, really when you get down to it, there isn't that much competition in this space, which you mentioned this in your piece, actually, Dev, is a bit of a shame that we're sort of losing a bit of that in terms of the open web, right?
I think as a philosophical problem, it does stink that there is less competition against Google. Like when Microsoft announces Mozilla, you know, penned a blog post saying, like, this is actually terrible because now it's more Google getting control of the web and the way the web is shaped. And it's not good for anybody. I'm glad Mozilla's still around, and I hope more alternatives pop up. But it is like, yeah, it's a good thing for users. It's a bad thing maybe for the web as a whole. But hopefully, you know, Microsoft needs a good browser. So I can't blame them for making this move.
I do adore Firefox.
Yeah, I was going to say, it makes Edge more competitive, but also it reduces competition in the market in a way, which is, I don't know, I feel a bit kind of torn on that.
Now for another potentially divisive topic, Twitter's edit button will or will not like appear. Like apparently, so Jack Dorsey in a Q&A with Wired said basically like there will not be an edit button anytime soon, at least as things stand. I think like despite so much clamor for it, I think that's actually the good way to handle this. But Sherlyn, Nick, what do you think?
I live on Twitter, as everyone knows, and Instagram. And
I have you muted. Yeah.
Thank you. No, you don't. You clearly don't. You reply to everything I tweet, Devendra, stop. But
their filters aren't that great. I'm trying to block Sherlyn out.
I'm trying to mute you. Now they tell me when you reply to people. You got to stop. Like, anyway, did Jack Dorsey give a reason as to why there will never be an edit button? Is it, like, too much work for them, or...?
I don't think he didn't really dive too much into the specifics, but let me see. So the quote is, when you send a text, you can't really take it back. And he's kind of pointing back to like Twitter as like an old, it used to be basically an SMS service.
Yes.
So to continue his quote, he says, we wanted to preserve that vibe, that feeling in the early days. Of course, you can't actually delete tweets.
You can.
So
a
you
lot
can't
of people
delete
do that.
Texts
yeah.
as much as I'd want to sometimes. Nick, thoughts?
Yeah, he did also say that they have experimented with offering or thought about offering a window where maybe for the first 30 seconds or for the first minute, you can change your tweets, but
like the Gmail unsend thing,
right.
Yeah.
But he didn't say we're going to implement that or we thought it was a good idea. He just said that we've thought about it, which is promising. Yeah. I think that's what people's assumption is, they've just got their head in the sand and they've never ever even considered it. So to know that they've at least thought about it does fill me with a little bit of hope. I do also fall into the camp of I'm happy not having it, but I do appreciate why people do.
I'd much rather live with the world where, oh man, I get a typo that gets out there or I plug in a wrong link or something, than a world where people can literally abuse the whole like tweet editing, like say something, then change it at the last minute. You can imagine how like certain like trolley types would abuse power like that.
Imagine a tweet that got really popular.
Yep.
14,000 retweets. Everybody's posting it, lots of blue check marks, lots of, you know, government types or journalists or something, and then you can edit it post facto to say Hitler did nothing wrong.
Yeah. The basic idea of tweet editing, it has to be a time-limited thing if they ever do it. It has to be, like, very controlled. The other problem is, like, Twitter is it's all about instantaneous conversation. So I don't think they can ever implement something where, like, there's a 30-second delay on your tweets, because you need, the whole point of the platform is to have this real-time conversation. If it was an optional feature for somebody who wants that safety net, maybe that's okay. For somebody who wants, like, a slower speed to their Twitter interactions. But then it's like, I also feel like that could get trolled.
I wonder how you would do that. Anyway, I just think that there's ways to, like prevent that post facto thing from becoming like a huge problem where like with Slack, when you edit a message in Slack, it shows you the history of who edited it and what the original thing was. Mm-hmm. There are ways to go about doing that.
But Slack is internal. It's much smaller.
Sure.
It's not broadcast. Yeah.
I mean, listen, I'm not on board fully with an edit button either. Like, I'm on that camp, but I'm saying that there are ways, if they thought carefully enough, they could, but I feel like just opens too many cans of worms.
That's what I'm listening. Like, I think the idea of giving some people this cushion of space to edit.
Why some people?
Whatever.
Who would you give this cushion of space?
Whoever wants it, Sherlyn. This is the difference between having a feature that's enabled instantly for everybody and just like, if right now, if you want to make your tweets private, you could.
Yes.
If you wanted. Just like that. It's your choice.
And so an edit button for some people?
No, it's your choice if you want to give yourself that tweeting cushion. Basically, like, your tweets won't go out immediately.
So restraint.
Restraint.
Okay, thank you. I thought we were talking about an edit button feature for some people. I was like, that doesn't make any sense.
I need to put an edit button on Sherlyn here.
I need to put an edit button on your face.
But see, this is,
I just think it would make the platform a bit messier. And you can say it's messy to have a typo in your tweet, but I think talking about different revisions and being able to look those up, you know, when we're battling misinformation these days and sort of rewriting history, like, this is only going to make things more complicated, in my opinion.
No, I'm with you. And also, welcome to the family, Nick. Sister and brother are fighting.
Oh, boy. No, it's okay. That's every episode. So, Sherlyn, you also want to bring up something big that's happening.
So, I don't think Engadget rarely gets a chance to cover a lot of political stuff very much. Just because, we don't really want to get into it. But this week, China and the U.S. signed phase one of a trade agreement. And it is, I think, an encouraging sign. And I think it would be very... it would be short-sighted if we didn't cover it. Like, if we wouldn't... We would look like we were too naive or, like...
Well, no, it's an encouraging sign of, like, the trash fire that was about to be started is less of a trash fire.
Exactly. Like, it's thank God we're not headed that
way anymore. In 2020, that's progress, baby.
Yeah. And on the same day, the impeachment articles, I believe, were signed. But anyway, what happened here was with the signing of this phase one trade agreement, China promised to spend $200 billion, I believe, dollars on American goods to even out the trade imbalance a little bit. And at the same time, the U.S. rolled back some tariffs on a certain category of goods. And they were like lower level devices, so like smart home, smart speakers, and
that
sort of stuff.
The U.S. actually gets very little out of this deal.
I'm not going to go too much into what that means. I think that on the grand scheme of things, this doesn't move a lot of things that much. Like, there are still other issues in tech related to the tense relations between the two countries, like Huawei being caught in the crossfire. Nobody understands what's going on there, I swear to God. Some people will argue to the death that Huawei's
state-owned. That may be Huawei's own fault there. I will say, we're talking to a lot of companies here in the U.S., like Logitech and others, who are like, they don't know how to price their products
because
they're getting made in China. So, like, there may be an extra $30 fee that they have to add. So that's the sort of problem we're seeing here.
It's the little companies that will be affected the most by any sort of tariff, because the big companies can absorb and the little companies can't. And I spent a lot of time talking to a lot of CTA representative companies at the show floor last CES, which was 2019, and they were all worried. And so I think this is an encouraging sign. It means, like, it's got a lot of, like, I mean, I'm maybe too optimistic here, but I think it's a good thing for people in tech to not have to worry about this. I don't know. Nick, you're in a whole other part of the world, dialing in from the UK. What are your thoughts on this, watching from afar?
I just love that it's called Phase One, because it makes me already invested in the kind of trade war cinematic universe that seems to be slowly emerging. That's all I can really say about
it. The Last Jedi is coming, yep.
That's basically it. That's right. Yeah, that's the best way to put it, Nick. Thank you very much. Talking about other trash fires, the Away CEO, Steph Corey, has decided she is not stepping down from her company after there was a bunch of reporting from Verge and elsewhere about her terrible management style and just, like, the way she's been treating employees was kind of abusive and not great. So after that reporting came out, she was said she was going to step down. There was going to be somebody else coming in as CEO. This week, we started the week off with her saying, no.
I'm
back. She's going to be co-CEO along with the new person.
She can't let go.
She can't let go.
It's been proven. If you've read any of the messages that they leaked or the screenshots of the messages, she can't let go. At 2 a.m.
Literally
she's
can't get
texting
go.
Employees.
This is just so we haven't really talked much about this story overall, but it is one of those things where this feels like the height of privilege in Silicon Valley. Like, this is something where the press and employees and a lot of people were talking about how they were being treated and the management style here. I remember seeing when this story initially came out, a lot of investors, a lot of people within the Valley were like, I don't see the problem here.
Yeah.
Like, she's doing her job. She's being a good CEO.
Client first, baby.
Yeah, by working her employees to the bone. This has been a really good story to talk about the disconnect between, I think, the insular Silicon Valley people and everybody else looking in at this crazy community. So good luck with that, everybody working there. The Away flagship store in New York is actually right down the street from us. And every time I walk by it, it is completely empty. I think they give out coffee now to get people to come in, but it's one of those things where it's just like, man, I wish we could all just agree that treating people badly is not a good management style.
I gotta say, like, I definitely judge people at the airport now where I see Away suitcases, and I'm like, do you
That's the only reason you judge people at the airport?
That's not the only reason. It's one of the many reasons I judge people at the airport. I have a good friend who has two Away suitcases, and we're like, maybe don't use them anymore.
I don't know if it's like cancel culture for Away, but it is the sort of thing where it's like, first of all, Away, the only thing special about Away at the beginning was that they had a battery pack in their suitcases. And there were a couple other companies doing that. They all raised a ton of money, but Away managed to survive by the amazing innovation of having a removable battery pack, because the FAA didn't want, like, they needed them removed when they were in cargo holding. So it's just one of those things. Like, Away was never that great. It was always this weird brand identity thing of like, oh, I have a special Away bag.
They also talk about the whole, like, traveling culture that the company apparently stood for. And I'm like, what? Like, I don't, that, what, huh?
Huh?
Go traveling and be so, like, privileged that you spend a ton of money on nice-looking battery-charging suitcases to then go traveling.
To be fair, it's not more expensive than, like, some other brands, but it is. I don't think it's as functional. I had an Away suitcase. Like, they're a larger carry-on. It was noticeably smaller than the Travel Pro I use as a carry-on everywhere. Travel Pro, people. Lifetime warranties. Just spend
Samsonite
the extra money. Get a Travel Pro. Get something else. Like, anybody have luggage gadget tips? I will say four-wheelers have gotten so much better.
Yeah.
Four-wheels are great.
Wait, Nick travels a ton, too.
Yeah, Nick, what are your thoughts here? Travel Talk, our new podcast.
I'm just amazed that when The Verge's reporting came out, the quote that she gave, or the apology she gave, she said it was wrong, plain and simple, right? Those were her words. And now it feels like she's saying, actually, it wasn't that wrong, right? Which is, I'm just shocked that Away would risk doing this, right? I mean, it's hard to say in terms of the public how much they will care about all of this. You know, think about Uber, for instance. How much of an impact did that really have in terms of their leadership change? But you just think, why would you risk a potential fallout with customers? And also, because a lot of the ways that they do marketing is through influencers, right? It's through sponsorships and this sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's possible that a lot of those people who they rely on in order to advertise these suitcases will maybe think twice about being associated with them, right? And so even just to bring her back on board, I mean, she was always, the plan was always that she was going to move over. I think it was to an executive chairman role, you know, and have the sort of the new guy come in as CEO. Like, that was always their plan. And once this reporting came out, then that was all sort of accelerated. But I just think to have her inside the company, especially in a co-CEO role, is just, it feels really risky.
I mean, maybe their sales have tanked so much that they're like, well, it doesn't hurt to bring her back on. The people who have stuck with us are going to stick with us regardless of whether she's there.
It is a question for the board. It's a question for the investors. It's just like, sometimes I look at Silicon Valley and I just, like, I talk to people on Twitter, I talk to VCs on Twitter, and they have these crazy beliefs. And I don't know, there's this crazy, like, libertarian philosophy going through everything. It's hard to really talk with them, but this is certainly an example of pure Silicon Valley extremism. Let's move on to other nice stuff. We won't be talking much about CES after this week. I want to forget about the show.
I know.
Entirely.
I know. I mean, listen, it will trail us just a little bit more, maybe until tomorrow, but we still did have to, like, even though we left Vegas, some of us were still churning out stories from after the show. You know, I published a follow on the state of foldable PCs because that's all I saw. Devendra got in a fight with Richard Lawler on our team
about AK. AK is dumb. AK is dumb, everybody. Go read our piece. But right now, AK is dumb, dumb, dumb.
It's entertaining to watch them file their copies and fight it out. In Richard's piece starts with, my colleague Devendra will have you believe, and he more or less calls you an idiot in his
opening. I will
say,
Richard Peace, his whole argument is that 8K is fine, which if that is your strong argument in favor of this technology, no.
Yeah, maybe
it's not the best place to start, but yeah, we will get Richard on at some point. We'll nerd out about this, but I will say, there were a ton of 8K TVs at CES. They look good. I wish they weren't all just playing the same damn YouTube demo reel. Like, I wish. I wish there was more, but there's not.
You can go read that thrilling article between the two of them. And I will say they did hug it out at the end, so it's great. And then, you know, Nick, I'll throw it to you to talk about what you wrote after the show. But I also wanted to shout out James True's piece on how 2020 will be a year where hearing aids will be discreet, finally. And I think that, I mean, I'm a big fan of anything that improves accessibility tech. Mm-hmm. And take a read if you have, you know, any hearing issues at all. You might be encouraged by what's coming this year.
Yeah, that's probably the best outcome from, like, the rise of wireless earbuds,
yes,
right?
It's absolutely.
Like, a lot of this tech is going to be moved into hearing aids. So that works. That's cool.
Nick, what did you write?
Towards the end of the show, I wrote a piece on a company called Emotech, which a couple of years back sort of won the hearts of show attendees with a smart speaker called Ollie, which was donut-shaped. And the big thing about it was that it was going to have its own voice assistant, its own kind of AI built from the ground up, and it was going to somehow, like, adapt to your personality. Like, it could become more of a sort of quick talker, or maybe be a bit more relaxed and placid, depending on what you're like as a person. It came out on Indiegogo. It got tons and tons of money, and surprise, surprise, we haven't seen anything about it yet. So I kind of checked up with that project to see, like, what on earth happened, and discovered that, well, the co-founder told me that they've moved over to a sort of software licensing model. Like, that's where they think that their revenue is going to be in the future as a company. They're trying to make the assistant, like, ready for the classroom and this sort of thing. And they're still working on Ollie, the speaker, but they don't have a timeline for when it's going to come out. And
hardware is hard.
Hardware is hard.
Yeah, that's the main takeaway from all these poor little hardware startups. Yeah.
So for backers, I don't have good news, unfortunately. But it was a good opportunity to look back on older projects and see, you know, if they'd actually come to light.
I will say, pro tip for everybody listening to the show: do not back hardware startups.
Do not back anything.
Stop. I think Pebble was, like, the last good one, and even that took, like, a while, and that was very long ago. And now Pebble has, like, it existed, it was backed, it was, like, a company, and now they're dead. So it's never a good story.
Anyhow, if you are still in the mood for CES stories, be sure to check out Engadget for all of the riveting follows. Meanwhile, we're pretty much done with CES, except for...
So we got some listener mail.
Yay! Love it. Hey, Dylan.
Speaking of CES stuff, so... last week you were talking about the weird Westworld dinner that you went to, the one where there were a bunch of actors and, like, they were all pretty much told to do the, like, Uncanny Valley version of social interactions where you're not quite sure if they're robots or not, and they knew too much about you, and there were definitely microphones all over the place.
Yeah.
The entire place was mic'd up.
Mm-hmm.
Dev, you said that this was actually kind of interesting because it was a way of getting past the weird, like, getting to know you part.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, it just felt like after you get past that awkward phase, it's sort of like, well, I could use this for parties. Like, when I go somewhere I don't know anybody, this would be a really useful service to have to make me feel more comfortable.
We got a listener mail from Dylan from London. So he says, big fan of the Revived podcast. It's a much must listen to me. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yay.
But getting to the important part, hearing you talk about the Westworld party that you went to last week reminded me so much of the types of events that I used to be booked to attend whilst attending Imperial College London. You mentioned you see events like the Westworld one happening in the near future, but they've already been happening for decades. It's called accompanimenting. And it's accompanimenting.
Wow.
He says it's your sole job to attend various events as a plant to stimulate conversations and to make the actual guest or guests feel like they are being heard and engaged with, and to promote particular viewpoints or ideas.
Huh.
It's a little bit like lobbying on the fly. You would have to know everything about your guests beforehand, usually weeks in advance, so you can be unscripted when you speak to them and give them a feeling of familiarity. These guests are typically donors to the college or well-established professionals and experts, though you'd have the occasional VIP from abroad. As part of the program, we would need to attend workshops on public speaking, presentation skills, mannerisms and style, and even one dance class. It was fascinating, well-paying, and, though strictly never discussed, the college turned a blind eye to relationships emerging with the guests.
Ooh.
That's, what? Okay. So, first of all, of course this existed.
I was going to be like, this explains so many of my...
I'm waiting for the, like, the Love Actually rom-com of this. It's like... oh, you're so, you know so much about me. You're so easy to talk to. Oh, you're actually a plant for me to feel happy at this party.
But that sounds depressing.
We can make this relationship work. There's something real from this accompanimenting, and that is the name of the movie.
Pretty Woman 2025.
Yeah.
Or How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, you know, that show without the losing part. I don't know. Nick, did you listen to our podcast last episode?
I,
of course not.
Wow, putting Nick on the spot.
What I will say is I've done my fair share of networking events in London, and either I haven't encountered one of these plants, or I have been so unsociable that they have been unable to sort of bridge that divide between me and
their
and
supercomputer is just like, yeah,
this guy's,
we're still working on
Yeah, this guy's a no-hoper. Let's just abandon him.
You're too humble. You are not in any way unsociable. You do not want people to tell... You do not want me to tell people about that Tumblr about you.
Listen, we do not talk about CES adventures and mishaps and...
Oh. Yeah.
What happens in Vegas, Sherlyn, what stays in Vegas?
You don't need to tell me that. I've left all my adventures behind.
Yeah.
So as a Brit, you don't know anything about this?
I mean, I haven't heard of it. As I say, if I've experienced it, I have not been aware of it.
I don't think it's a Britain-specific thing. I think it happens worldwide. It's just that like people are so good at being subtle
about it. I think we found a new podcast series. Oh my God. We need to find these people.
We need to interview them.
We need to talk to them.
I would be one of these people.
So I was trying to do a little bit of research on this to see if like there's a Wikipedia article or like some long history of this sort of thing. Really, it was just like Google results saying you spelled accompanying wrong, or you'd like put too many letters on the back
like
end of that.
It's like Fight Club. You don't talk about accompanimenting club.
So the one thing that I found was literally one tweet, hashtag accompanimenting, and it was for clearly an escort service.
Yeah. I was going to say it sounds very much like escorting.
And the entire escort service website was all in Polish.
Google Translate, yo.
Oh, man.
You don't want to know. You don't want to know. It's good.
I do feel like, just on a broader level, like, we are awkward. Like, people are awkward. Nobody likes to feel awkward. So there are a ton of ways, like, I feel like we as a society have figured out ways to make people less awkward. So I'm not surprised this has been a thing. I'm sure tech will, like, infuse versions of this into the future.
Robots. Robots will do this.
Know. Oh, man.
Man. Well, I found my new calling. I'm going to try and find a way into the world of accompanimenting, and I'll report back.
Hey, Nick, what are you working on?
Well, I've got a feature in the works that is still early days for now, but I'm starting to get the interviews together for it, all about esports and how there's a lot of pros now who are sort of bucking the trend that, you know, you get into the scene when you're 18, 19, maybe as some kind of child prodigy. You play for a few years and then you retire and you become like a streamer or a coach or something or other. And
when do you retire, by the way?
Yeah. And
when, like at 30, I guess?
Well,
that's when you're old.
People think that usually it's like your mid-20s, right? Like I think peak performance is supposed to be 2021, that sort of thing. and that's just not true, depending on the game that you're playing. You know, there's people playing Street Fighter and Tekken that are well into their 30s, if not 40. There's the Tetris world champion for the longest time was a guy in his 40s. And even in some of the younger games like Overwatch and League, we're starting to see people kind of starting to get up to that 30-year-old milestone. So this piece is all about talking with those people about how they've managed to extend their careers for so long, how their industry is changing, and you know, how long they expect to play for. So it's all about sort of the kind of elder statesman of esports, or the kind of the,
oh, that's hilarious.
The Roger Federers of esports.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing.
I cannot wait to read about septuagenarian like esports players in like a couple decades. You like, where do these people go over time? Like I think the games will evolve because people who grew up playing games may still want to play games when they're much, much older, when they're senior citizens.
I know of a lot
that's
of
gonna
old
be really
people.
Fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah, who still play games.
Sure.
Devendra being one of them.
Oh wow. Oh, you know, yeah, I am old and playing games. I did not just discover Nintendo like a newborn child. Like
I am
Charlotte.
Fresh and young. I am fresh meat.
What are you working on, Charlotte?
I am working on, talk about depressing. I am working on a review of the HP Elite Dragonfly laptop. It's a super, very lightweight, super compact laptop with Core V Pro power. I guess that means stuff to y'all. And I am taking some Sundance briefings like you are, Dev.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also pre-planning the Samsung Galaxy Unpacked event, which is coming up very quickly. I've already booked my flights to San Francisco for that. And also booking all my Mobile World Congress appointments, which I think, Nick, I'll see you there, right?
Yeah, man, I can't believe we're talking about this or even thinking about it already. I'm still trying to get over CS jet lag. Please don't talk to me about Barcelona.
Let's just deal with it.
Dude, it's coming up. My appointments are booking up already.
This is our life. I am also in the midst of planning for South by Southwest, which is a show that takes place in March. So it's actually not too long, and now is the time when I need to plan. So maybe we'll get some podcast stuff out of that. Maybe you'll find something at Mobile World Congress too. Trillin, looking forward to all that. Yeah, mainly this planning. I'm doing a couple of reviews. Right now working on reviewing the Radeon 5600 XT, which is the mid-range GPU they announced, AMD announced back at CES. So better 1080p gaming. Look for a review on Tuesday. And yeah, that's pretty much it. What is keeping you sane? Like, we're all so busy. We're all working so much. Sherlyn, I hear you got something.
You make that sound like a disease.
Yeah.
I got a Switch. And I discovered how much more fun having a Switch in my life makes long-haul flights.
Yeah.
I literally, as I was taking off to Vegas, pulled out my Switch, started playing Overcooked because that's the only game I play.
Let me just say, I'm glad to hear Sherlyn is not playing the goddamn built-in airplane games. That's the only reason.
Do they even have Plants vs. Zombies for Switch?
For Switch, no. Yeah, but it'd be dumb to play that game on Switch when I play on my phone already. You know what I mean? I'm trying to get games that I can only play on my phone on Switch. And so anyway, I took off playing Overcooked 2, and when I finally gave up playing, I looked up and we were about to land, and I was like, this is amazing. You just changed my life. So then I went on a binge and I started installing other games, I installed Resident Evil 5. I played
a
demo.
Actually, yeah, what games are you playing
on
your Switch?
So I consider myself a real gamer now that I've played a demo of Resident Evil 5. But I also installed Snipper Clips at the suggestion of Chris Velasco.
That's all right. Yeah.
That's a good one. I also have been playing Overcooked 2, which sure. And Just Dance, which I'm super into. They have K-pop on there, holy crap, it is getting my moves on.
Which Switch did you get?
The regular guy, the second gen regular. I bought it secondhand, and the person who I bought it off of hasn't given me everything that comes in the package yet, so I still don't have the Joy-Con straps, which is terrible.
Luckily you could get a ton of those on Amazon.
Yeah.
Nick, anything keeping you sane?
Yeah, as I just mentioned, I'm still recovering from jet lag from CES. It's a very long flight from Las Vegas to London. So one of the things that managed to keep me awake over the weekend was I've just started watching the second part of the latest season of Terrace House, which just dropped on Netflix. So this is the kind of the reality TV show based in Japan, but it's a very sort of endearing and much more whimsical version of Big Brother. I absolutely love it. It's so easy to watch. And yeah, they break them up into these 12 episode parts, and the second part just dropped before Christmas. So it's been great to just kind of slob out, be a vegetable, and slowly find my sleep cycle and sanity again.
I love all the Japanese shows too. They're very chill. I really Midnight Diner? The one where it's just the guy who hosts a late night cafe and he solves. I think you'd like this, Sherlyn. It's a late night bar, and it's just people who come in after work for a meal. And the chef is just this wise guy who helps solve people problems. He's a therapist and a chef. And it's a show about food. And they're making a movie about it right now too. So.
It sounds a little too chill for me, to be honest. I like Korean variety shows like Running Man, honestly. Y'all should check that out.
You just need constant conflict.
Constantly bombarded.
It just needs to keep going.
Yeah.
As for me, I am playing NeoCab on my iPhone, which is this fun Apple Arcade thing. Let me just say, Sherlyn, I'm so sorry. You're cursed with an Android phone because Apple Arcade.
That was a very visceral reaction for me.
Can we get a bleep? Yes, Sherlyn, because Apple Arcade, I find, is a great service for just I need a good game. I need a good game for this flight, something to get me interested. And I love that I can just go around and pick a game, and it's interesting. So NeoCab is this thing. It is similar to the narrative storytelling games from like Telltale and like Life is Strange, where you're a futuristic Uber driver just picking up people all over the world and like listening to their adventures. It's a fun game. It's a really good flight game because it doesn't need much movement and much. You don't really need to do much. It's more about choosing the conversations. I will say, I can certainly tell, like, it feels like the studio doesn't have much room for direction because there are certainly elements where it's like, they can only, like, animate people sitting in the back seat, even though you're going to pick up your friend who you haven't seen in 10 years and you'd probably sit in the front seat together and, like, hug or something. Clearly there are limits to this game, but I like the writing. I think it's a fun, chill thing.
I've already played this on my Switch.
On your Switch? Oh, really? How much did you pay for it?
I downloaded a demo, so it was free.
Oh, so you could play it for like an hour? I'm paying like nothing. I'm paying like $5 a month, and I could play this game and so many other things. It's kind of great, actually.
$5 a month.
So I can't believe that to wind down from work, you're playing a game about the gig economy, which is definitely tech-related.
It's definitely me.
It's Dev's ultimate fantasy to be an Uber driver.
Oh, man. Just imagine... Lyft. There is something romantic, though, about the idea of, like, being a cab driver and hearing people's stories. Like, this has been a long time thing. I'm thinking of, like, that Bob's Burgers episode, too, where he becomes a cab driver for a night. It just kind of lives into that whole thing.
Well, this all comes full circle. This is Dev's long con to become a, you know, Lyft driver and also then parlay those things that he learns into accompanimenting.
Listen, don't you guys remember the opening of Logan where, after all of his adventures... Poor Wolverine
old
is
and
just
broken.
A future Uber driver. And that's the end for all of us. That is, you know, I don't believe in an afterlife. I don't believe in heaven or hell. I do believe that we were going to be stuck in purgatory just
driving
other people
around.
That is where
the
we're
going
to end up.
I'm sticking with Crazy Taxi, guys. I need something that's a lot more optimistic than this.
And that's it for the show today, you guys. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, and I chat about movies and TV and stuff Sherlyn will never watch at /filmcast at /film.com.
If you want to talk to the ever optimistic Nick Summers, he's...
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. My handle is at NISummers.
Meanwhile, you can always tell me what games to play on Switch or try to friend me on Switch. I'm at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter. Make sure to email us your thoughts and feedbacks at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on literally anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify. Come back next week for a fresh new episode. Boom, clap the sound of my heart. The beat goes on and on and on and on and on.